gone. No bombs fell from the sky, no blood soaked the ground. No powder flash blinded the eye, no deathly thunder sound. But just as sure as the hand of God, they brought death to my hometown. They brought death to my hometown.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus, the show Alternative Visions. Okay, today we're going to talk about Venezuela. We've been watching the news in recent weeks about events going on in Ukraine, and we had a few shows here on that, talked about what was really happening on the ground in Ukraine, and it's becoming pretty clear that the U.S. Security and spy agencies, CIA and NSA and whoever, were really behind that coup. And now it's coming out. We're actually paid some of those proto-fascist groups on the ground quite a bit of money to stir the pot over there and create a coup in the Ukraine. And at the same time, maybe folks weren't watching too close, gee, it looks very much like the same thing going on in Venezuela in recent weeks. Again, groups on the ground creating a stir in the situation with the government there, violence, and pretty much trying to create the conditions for what looks like another event. And we know in Venezuela the U.S. has been trying to overthrow that government for a decade or so now. So I wouldn't be surprised if we had the same folks behind the scenes stirring the discontent and trying to create instability there to justify a coup. Okay, my guest today is Alan Benjamin. Alan Benjamin is a delegate to the San Francisco Labor Council and a longtime member of Office of Professional Employees. Alan also works in the International Labor Office in Geneva, so kind of has a feel, the pulse of what's going on in a lot of labor movements around the world. And I've asked him to come on and give us his view, tell us what's going on in Venezuela. Is this another Ukraine repeat here? And what's different about it? People are fighting back, obviously. Alan.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Glad to have you on. Alan, why don't you just jump in and give us your take. What's going on in Venezuela, latest update, and what's your view of the causes behind that, and how is it similar or different from Ukraine?
Well, I think it's correct for you to frame it as just the continuation of U.S. policy that we've seen in the Ukraine. It's a very dangerous situation in Venezuela today, against a backdrop of economic crisis, provoked largely by U.S. policy, not solely, and I'll get into that. The right wing that has never accepted the regime and the revolutionary process that began under Hugo Chavez, where despite the limitations of the Chavez government, the oil and natural resources of the country have remained and been strengthened in the hands of the state and of the people. There has been no privatization. In fact, there's been nationalization of certain industries where employers have refused to go along with the process, pay taxes. There's been nationalization in many cases. The workers have taken over the factories with workers' control. So there's been a genuine revolutionary development and movement in Venezuela ever since Chavez took over, with the openings provided with workers from below creating and expanding and fighting. And so you have a genuine health care system that's made available to the people for the first time. The oil resources, and that's the main source of income for the country, have gone for the first time in the history of the people to the lower, to the working class and to the low-income folks who've seen this as their revolution. And it's not a secondary question because Venezuela, like Brazil and other countries, has a large African population, Afro-Venezuelan, and they're the people who are most beneficiaries of this, and the white middle class, upper middle class, and the elites have combined a very racist elite class rejection of this process. So you have in the United States, of course, the corporate interests saying we don't like this, and they've the Chavez and now Maduro, who was elected president last April, continue to pay back the debt and the loans from previous regimes because they don't want to sever ties with the Wall Street and the banks. But despite their accommodating, the United States has never reconciled itself to this regime. And they attempted and organized a coup, financed the coup attempt in April 11th in 2002. And what's astounding is that there was a mobilization of millions of people that defeated a coup, defeated a U.S.-backed coup that was that had a whole section of the army, a section of the police that was behind them that they had financed and funded through the National Endowment for Democracy, where the a wing of the trade unions, the oil workers union, had backed the coup. And with the funding and training from the AFL-CIO and at the time what was AFLD before it became the Solidarity Center. Today it's back up to the same dirty tricks.
Let me interrupt you there and have a comment here. Mm-hmm. I'd like you to comment. You mentioned non-government organizations like National Endowment for Democracy, and it seems that those groups are kind of playing a central role over in the Ukraine as well. Can you describe what that is and the role it appears that these U.S.-based NGOs, as we call them, have been playing here in Venezuela?
Well, the key for the United States is to try to wage wars through proxy forces or through destabilization through organizations that aren't directly linked to the State Department. But the funding sources, if you follow the money, you'll always be taken back to the U.S. State Department and to different agencies of the U.S. government. So in Ukraine, you have the National Endowment for Democracy, but you also have a little-known NGO called Canvas. And Canvas, which is based in Serbia, has funneled most of the $90 billion that has gone to Ukraine since the Orange Revolution. It's just astounding.
$90 billion? I heard, that Assistant Secretary of State Nuland admit on TV or in a film recording that the U.S. had spent $5 billion
Bush.
So it was $90 billion?
$5 billion since Bush. I'm talking way back. I'm talking within the last 20 years.
Okay.
Where they've been trying to, after the fall of the Berlin Wall and the fall of the Soviet Union, where they've been trying to, this is a long-term strategy of trying to dismember states along the Russian border, isolate Russia. This is the Cold War never died in that sense. Nuland and then the assistant secretary for the region explained that it's $5 billion right now. But the funding, and that's what they announce, the covert funding is probably much larger. And so you have these NGOs that funnel the money to develop contacts, they organize seminars, they influence and pay off journalists, When you look at Maidan Square in Ukraine, you know, they not only did that, but they had funded a lot of these neo-fascist groups, the Svoboda Party in particular,
Yeah, I understand. A lot of those demonstrators in the street were getting like $50 or $100 a week.
They were paid a week, and now we know. Now we learn that the key moment in the Ukraine where the tide turned when 28 people were shot in the square. We now learn that the forces were paid out of U.S. funding from Canvas, and they were stationed in buildings surrounding the square and made it appear like it was the government of Yanukovych that had fired on the square, and that was turned the tide against the government, and that was open provocation paid for, funded with our tax money, and Venezuela is no different. We saw the coup attempt, and in any other situation where people weren't mobilized. I mean, Chile people were organized, but you didn't have millions of people in the streets to reverse a coup. I have never heard of a coup being reversed in Latin America. The going back to Arbenz and going in 1954 in Guatemala, the coups have succeeded. In Venezuela, it didn't, because the revolutionary process is very deep, and it's affected and it's benefited millions of people who understood that it was Washington trying to roll back the gains. And this is what's happening today. There was a lot of hope that the right-wing opposition, Capriles and Leopoldo López, would be able to win elections. And it's odd, but there have been more elections in Venezuela than in any other country. And the OAS comes in and monitors, the Jimmy Carter Foundation comes in. There has never been any complaint of fraud or manipulation of votes in Venezuela, even by forces that would love to say the elections were fraudulent. Venezuela's probably had the most elections, most transparent, open process, and the right wing continues to lose votes. In 2000, this is very important to understand, in April 2013, after Chavez dies, Capriles loses by a very narrow margin, 1.5%. And the right wing is emboldened, claims fraud, but that doesn't go anywhere because all the international observers said it was no fraud, you just lost. And so all the energy was then placed to say, well, the right wing said, we are the majority. The U.S. funneled in more money to these forces to give them the ability to, there's been no censorship. They have radio stations, they have TV stations, they have a powerful lobby, including state governors that are linked to the right wing, in the case of Mérida, in the case of the three states that are directly controlled by the right wing governors. So there's almost the conditions of a civil war. And the key was the December elections, municipal elections. The right wing was convinced they were going to win these elections. And
this past December? Is that the past
this
December
past
here?
December 2013. And the right wing of Capriles and Leopoldo López got trounced. Trounced in the election because the people are just tired of lies about the government. And mind you, the base of the government is also, many people are uneasy about the politics of Chavez and Maduro, and I'll get into that in a second in the trade union movement. But there's a very clear anti-imperialist understanding that we're never going to get anything positive out of the U.S. coming in, because everywhere they come in, they bring in the IMF, the austerity, and they roll back health care, they roll back education, they roll back, and they want to privatize oil and take that money back to Miami, where a lot of the wealthy have gone to flee. So the elections was a total mandate for the Maduro government to move forward. What's happened? the right wing has said, we're never going to go anywhere. They said, and Corina Machado, who's one of the deputies of the right wing, who's the clearest about this, said, we're not going to get anywhere through the elections. We have to take extra legal measures now. We have to go disrupt, take it to the streets. We've got to create chaos and use the fact that the economy is in shambles. It is in shambles. It's in shambles because the price of oil has gone down on the world market with the fracking and all these other things. The Venezuelan oil is not the major, it's hurting the country. The continued payment of the foreign debt, which is what a lot of union people are saying, Maduro, you got to be crazy. You're only fueling the economic crisis that the right wing is manipulating. Stop paying that debt. It's not our debt. It was the debt that was inherited, that Chavez inherited. And so let's just a moratorium on the payment so that that money can stay here for, you know, subsidizing as we continue to do subsidizing goods, et cetera. Then, of course, you have the capitalists are hoarding. They're not selling their products. They're warehousing basic food and commodities,
and that's what's driving inflation up, right?
By creating inflation,
reducing the supply. That's what drives
reducing
inflation.
Reducing the supply. It's 56%
that's part of the disruption. Yeah,
56% inflation. So you have in certain neighborhoods, you have women coming out banging empty pots like they did in Chile, as a sign. Everything is being prepared for a coup, and when you have Deborah Jacobson, who's the Undersecretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, say, as she did on the 27th of March, that all options are on the table. All options are on the table as far as U.S. policy is concerned in Venezuela. Because what they're saying now is that Maduro is clamping down on the opposition, that the opposition has no space anymore, so that the government has to create a government of national unity with the opposition forces, and the government says they've been trounced in the elections. The people don't want them. You can't. Why are you interfering and telling us how we're supposed to run things? That we need to open up and expand the government to include people that don't share our policies. We don't come and tell you what to do in the United States. And it's an open, now they're talking about sanctions. The U.S. is saying sanctions because you are not creating the democratic space for the opposition to work. And the government correctly is saying, excuse me, but these forces are out in the streets. They're disrupting. They're creating chaos. These guarimbas or these blockades where they burn tire, debris, furniture. Now they're dismantling buildings. This the day before yesterday, they went and bombed the Ministry of Housing. There were 58 people killed inside the building. Who's jailed, Leopoldo López, because of his involvement in all of this, said, yeah, we did that because the money is going into creating housing for all these black niggers. This is what it's openly racist now. So you have that whole backdrop of just deeply embedded racism.
Well, it sounds like the U.S. has a plan B here, and it's a classic example of they go in through these groups and everything with the right wing to disrupt and cause an economic crisis, and then when the government tries to maintain some sense of civility and order, then they say, you're denying democracy, and we're going to create sanctions. It sounds like they've got a plan A and a plan B both being implemented.
Well, what they're saying is we want regime change. Mm. And the regime change can happen either by a coup, although, mind you, we're not for that. You know, they always say, of course, we're not for that. Mm-hmm. But they don't rule it out as an option. And three generals were jailed, Air Force generals were jailed this week because they were turned in by lower officers in the Air Force saying that they were plotting a coup. So these are not abstract question. This
is getting close. The coup attempt is getting close.
Oh, yeah. The Spanish newspaper El País on April 1st said the coup is in the air. Everybody's talking about it. But if they can't get it through that means, they want to pressure. And this is the second front that they have. Up until now, the different governments of South America have stood firmly with Venezuela, Brazil, the UNASUR countries, Brazil, Bolivia, Ecuador, Argentina have taken a strong stand against the opposition, said that they're the ones responsible for the chaos and for the disruption, not the government that's trying to restore order. In no country, they said, would any government tolerate this, and how is it that the United States is allowing this for forces that had every chance at the ballot box, weren't able to succeed, and now they're taking their politics in the form of vandalism and disruption.
Yeah, in the Ukraine, the elections were coming up in less than a year, and they pulled the coup anyway. So elections are just a tactic. If they can win that way, fine. If not, then the hell with it.
By any means. And so So the other option that they have is to try to break the unity of the South American governments to try to pressure Maduro and the new government in Venezuela to accommodate and to create a government of national unity, or to make major concessions to the right-wing opposition and make concessions in the policy sphere around liberalizing the quote, liberalizing the markets, privatizing and deepening. In fact, the right wing has adopted what's called the 12-point program of rolling back the gains that have been made, and they're insisting that that program must be implemented by Maduro, or Maduro plus Capriles and a new government of national unity to prevent chaos and prevent a coup. And so far, the governments of Latin America have not bought this, but there's a tour now being organized in Brazil, and Brazil's very key. Corina Machado is a former deputy of the right wing. She was demoted, and she lost her position. She was removed because she had agreed to become ambassador for Panama to the OAS when Venezuela refused to have her be the ambassador to the OAS.
Well, wait a minute. She's a Venezuelan, but she's going to be an ambassador from Panama? Well, I don't understand that one.
Panama is a huge U.S. ally right now.
Anything I understand that.
And so, yes, they said, well, you can't represent another government. And she said, well, it was just to take the seat. They were offering me a seat at the OAS, and so she was removed. She was indicted, removed. But she's the voice piece for the United States, and she's on a tour of Brazil, Corina Machado, and she's been meeting with all top government officials and telling them the following: you guys have played such a responsible role in helping the, you know, the reasonable and responsible people in Haiti. You've conducted, and it's true, Haiti has played, the Brazilian government of Lula, and now of Dilma, have done the dirty work for the United States in overseeing the occupation over the past 10 years in Haiti. And Corina Machado is saying, well, the same responsible politics that you did on behalf of the U.S., she doesn't say it in exactly those words, but that's what she means, you can do in Venezuela. You have to bring all the parties together and host a peace conference. And get us all to agree to the 12-point program for economic reforms and political reforms so that we have a voice. And she's finding takers. She's finding takers in Brazil. She's in Brazil today and meeting with opposition forces in Brazil, but including government people. So this front, they want to try, the U.S. is very consciously funding this tour of Corina Machado throughout the continent to try to break down that alliance that has so far helped, the Venezuelan government. So, you know, yeah, they have their plan B, you know, by whatever means, regime change. If it's through a coup or if it's through internal and external pressure to make the government of Maduro get to a negotiating table and make the changes that the U.S. is requiring.
Now, I've heard also that the U.S. is its allies down there in the government, Panama, as you've mentioned, but also Colombia. It sounds to me like Colombia is trying to set up some sort of a border state and military sanctuary for these right-wing forces. So are we going to see a, comment on that, and are we going to see of a military uprising out in the provinces where it's close to Colombia with the help of Colombia?
Well, that's where the chaos has been the greatest. That's where the drug dealers, the drug smugglers that are now working directly with the security forces in the right wing, these yesterday and the day before, the Venezuelan government announced that they had arrested 50 Colombian drug dealers, the narcotraficantes, who were bringing in money and weapons from Colombia to assist these people on the blockades, these guarimbas, who initially were students, middle-class students at some of the universities, but now people have appeared from the shanty towns and elsewhere who were staffing these barricades, and they're being paid. They had two people on Venezuelan TV last night saying, yes, well, we get a lot of money. And, you know, there's a crisis here, and they're offering us money to continue to burn down things. And, I have to feed my family. This is being stirred up. Of course, the U.S. claims that they're waging a war on drugs. You know, we know that they're in cahoots with all these drug dealers and drug lords. And now they're being used to try to destabilize the government as well. The U.S. is up to its dirty tricks. Obama claimed that, you'll recall when he was elected in 2008, one of his first foreign policy speeches was in Trinidad Tobago in February of 2009, and he said, We want a new relationship with the hemisphere. The era of coups, of covert CIA destabilization and assassination attempts of foreign leaders, that's a thing of the past. We're moving on to a new, covenant with the people of Latin America. And he talked about the good neighbor policy of FDR and the whole business. And no sooner had he said that, a few years later, he organized and financed the coup against Manuel Zelaya in Honduras, which you'll recall. Mm-hmm. And now he's up to the same stuff, same dirty tricks.
Yeah, well, that's Obama. You know, which face is looking at you today isn't the face that looks at you tomorrow. That guy is something else. Okay.
But in the middle of all of this, how are the people in Venezuela reacting?
And this yes, what's going on the ground?
The union movement is divided. There's a large, and which is very disappointing and very has made many of us very angry, a wing of the unions who should know better, because they've taken a very, very... There are many valid and legitimate reasons for their grievances against the government. And this is a government that is very top-down, very little space for real... It claims participatory democracy, but it's very corporatist. And so the unions that are part of the government, the new union federation, the CSTB, and the party of the government, the Socialist Unified Party of Venezuela, are really government-controlled. And so the independent unionists, independent political activists have had to forge their own organizations. And a lot of these organizations, like the National Union of Venezuelan Workers, UNT, and the different political formations, most of them situated themselves largely within sort of the Bolivarian process. That's the references to, you know, to Simon Bolivar, who was the national hero against Spain in the Wars of Independence in 1810. And so Bolivar is a symbol of national liberation and national resistance. But a lot of the organizations of the UNT and others have joined critically the opposition, the right-wing opposition.
What unions have joined the opposition, and what
The first one that joined openly was the Oil Workers Union under Froilán Barrios, who was one of the biggest traders, and he was funded directly by AFLD
What is AFLD for the listeners?
AFLD no longer exists formally because it had such a bad reputation. It's the American Institute for Free Labor Development. It was the conduit from the State Department.
Another NGO, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an NGO that received funds to organize coups. They organized in 1954 openly. The documents have now been released, and books have been written galore about the role of AFLD in pushing the labor movements in this country to organize against any progressive politician, Joaquín Arbenz in Venezuela, against Salvador Allende in 1973, and backed all the dictatorships in the period of the dirty wars of the 70s and 80s in Argentina and Brazil. A horrendous role. And so that was shut down, but they created the Solidarity Center. Supposed to be transparent and open, but the AFLD and then the Solidarity Center have continued to take State Department money and to organize the so-called democratic unions. And in the case of the CTV, which was the Venezuelan Oil Workers Unions Federation, the main federation, they were in the front lines of the coup attempt in 2002. They organized a strike of oil workers. They shut down the country. And they were in the streets with a wing of the army to remove Chavez. All in the name of Chavez is top down, and a lot of legitimate issues that may have occurred, but you don't take those legitimate issues and block with the United States and play their role. And a lot that debate's happening today because there's a very I've been to Venezuela 3-4 times and met with a lot of these people, Chirino and a lot of the sort of revolutionary left unionists are so anti-Chavez that they've not realized that their alliances with the CTV, they've created an alliance with Barrios, who's the open pro coup organizer in Venezuela. They've created alliances with the CTV that are just unprincipled and unacceptable. Not with the right-wing opposition forces as such, but with the right-wing unions who are openly calling for a coup against Chavez.
And besides the oil workers who are openly calling for a coup, what other right-wing unions?
Well, the others
unions?
have created the Fit de Cebes, which is this new coalition of unions, of sort of some left unions. This is some public sector workers, some sectors of the government, state workers, and they've created this alliance with the CTV in Froilán Barrios. That is what many of us are very strongly regretting. At the same time, there's something very positive. The wing of the independent union movement of UNT has created an alliance with a lot of the unions of the CSTB, of the Bolivarian unions, and said and issued a manifesto saying no to the coup, no to U.S. intervention, no to the right wing, but we have our own grievances. We are not going to bury these. In fact, we call for Maduro to refuse to pay the foreign debt, and we call for sitting down with Maduro and presenting our demands as unions to him, including nationalizing the banks, because the bankers are destabilizing the country, preventing the capitalists from hoarding. Anybody who's accused of hoarding, they should be jailed, because what they're doing is sabotage to the country, and they're creating the inflation. And we want stronger measures to be taken against the bosses and the corporations. We want to have their increased taxes on these corporations, because the irony is that the government has tried as best as they can to accommodate and to keep everybody in the process, including the big business. But the big business hasn't played the game. They've funded the opposition, and they've taken their money to Miami. They've decapitalized, and now they're doing everything to create this inflationary spiral that's the backdrop that's of the discontent that they can play into and manipulate to try to get people to join them in these protests. And these
so we got a real split in the union movement down there, I guess. There is a split.
Yeah.
One side pretty much saying, look, Maduro, you need to go further. You can't keep playing footsie with these guys. And the other saying, let's... it's incredible. Unions actually saying, let's join with that right wing.
Well, that right wing will cut their throat. It's not openly with the right wing political parties. It's with the right wing unions that are allied with those political parties. So it's they can present it as a united front of unions for democracy, but within that they're the open coup plotters, and they're the ones who are calling the shots. So it's an unprincipled coalition, but they would be the first to say, no, we're not blocking with Maduro. We're not with the jailed Leopoldo Lopez, who's one of the most extreme, or the more responsible of right wingers, was the candidate for president, Enrique Capriles. We're not doing that, but de facto, in fact, by blocking with them, they're not putting forward the demands of no to the coup, respect the Constitution. And with all of this, there's one last element that I've left out. The United States has never recognized the election of April 2013 that brought Maduro to power. They've never recognized that government officially. So many of us in this country are saying, hands off Venezuela, recognize the Maduro government.
Well, when you start plotting to overthrow them, it makes sense not to recognize them, I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Tell us about the students. You know, the news says, the students are for the coup, and, you know, they're manning these right-wing barricades and so forth. In the West, you kind of think of, student movements, they tend to be anti-government sometimes, or most of the time. But here it looks like the students are sort of leading the charge here on behalf of the right wing. Explain that to the audience.
They're different universities. First of all, for students as a whole, there are very few job opportunities today because of the economic crisis. The inflation, jobs are closing, companies are shutting down and taking their money and going to Miami and putting them in accounts in the Cayman Islands. So there's a conscious and open policy of the right wing and the capitalists to decapitalize and there are very few job openings. The government's indecision about where to go is they're not putting in a lot of money into public universities. So a lot of the public universities are being defunded. And the priority has gone to housing and to health care for the poorest of the poor, which is fine, but a whole layer of students have felt abandoned. Within that, they're the more privileged universities, which are the private universities, where the base, which is the base of the opposition in the Guarimbas. So backdrop of general discontent, no job openings, no future, no possibilities for them. These students tend to be whiter, and the more the elite. It's the upper middle class and upper middle class.
So the Harvards versus the community college folks, I guess.
The community college folks are not out in the streets against the government, not at all. Though they're also discontented with the government because the government is seen as the one responsible for the inflation and for all these problems. You know, you can sort of, the United States is not seen openly as the one that's promoting and disrupting, though the government explains that every day. And you know, people have a healthy distrust of governments everywhere to begin with, including governments that are trying to do better, but that still have top-down measures, that are corporatist, that have tight control, that don't allow a real democratic space. I'm not trying to idealize the Chavez or Maduro in any way. I'm trying to give you a sense of the contradictions that exist within this government that give the space for people's discontent to be...
Are there student movements that are mobilizing on behalf of the government, or is it
they
just...
They don't get depressed. The largest demonstrations of students and the farmers and people, they're out in the streets every day protesting for the government, but the U.S. media, Reuters and others, they don't tell you about them. If you go to the Telesur, which is the Venezuelan TV, which you can get, you can see on any cable, anybody with cable gets Telesur, you'll see these huge mobilizations which are out in the streets for the government. But the ones who are getting the press are the students that are creating these blockades and burning tires and actually disrupting. These Guarimbas aren't just anything. They're not just blockades. Nobody can get by. And so bus routes are disrupted. People can't get to work. When they try to get out of the buses to walk through, they're beaten and pelted with rocks. 28 people have died just trying to cross the Guarimbas to get to work. So it's a tremendously tense situation. And the students there, of course, they get funded. There's a lot of money to keep them fed while they're out. Now we know that many of them have weapons because some of the people are shot. They're two student movements.
What can you mentioned people being shot? I know a number of people have been killed there. What do we know? Is it like the Ukraine? Certain people being paid to shoot other people to create this
absolutely
appearance of great disruption?
Absolutely. I asked Mark Weisbrot of Venezuela Analysis, who are the 28 people who were shot and by whom? And he says the facts are starting to come in. The right wing claims that they say it's the government shooting on us. But the people who've been killed are not oppositionists. These were people who were trying to get through to work and were shot by the right wing people linked to these drug dealers, and now sectors of the population are getting armed of these right wing groups. And they've shot at them as provocations, much like they did in Maidan and Kiev. So yes, there's a tremendous parallels, as you said from the beginning. And the 28 people shot were not shot by the government. The government's been using, it's too much restraint in trying to deal with this. They've created a round table for a peace conference, and the right wing boycotted it. Said, no, we have nothing to meet with you. Now there was a delegation that came in from UNASUR, and they agreed to meet in.
UNASUR is the South American government.
That's the South America. Yeah, that's correct. The South American governments, and they came in, and the delegation said, "We'll host a roundtable."
But the right wing doesn't want to talk.
No, because they said UNASUR is too identified, too pro-government. So we want OAS to come in, the Organization of American States, which is led by the United States. And the government said, no, we don't want the United States to be determining what we do. OAS is the United States.
So, tell us a little bit about the military. You mentioned that it appeared several Air Force generals who have been arrested, turned in by their lower officers, were plotting the coup here. It's interesting, the Air Force in Latin America always leads these coups, it seems. But what's happening as the military? How is the military aligned or split in this conflict? The rest of society seems to be lined up with groups for and against. What can you tell us about what's going on in the military, and will the military continue to support Maduro?
The weak link from the point of view of the United States is the Air Force. It tends to be the upper class elite that always gravitate towards the Air Force.
Mm.
And it's the junior lieutenant officers who said, who turned them in, and these three generals never claimed otherwise. They said, well, they were doing their patriotic duty to remove a government that's, you know, socialist and moving us away from our democratic values and all the other gibberish. But I don't know that much. What's interesting is that a general, a U.S. general, Kelly, I don't have his first name right offhand, but testified at a Senate hearing at the end of March, I believe it was March 24th, Foreign Relations Committee, and was asked to speak about what is the state of the military in Venezuela. And he actually gave an account that said most of the military are with the government. There's a strong base of support that most of the military during the coup of 2002 did not back the opposition. So he was giving a sober assessment that the military is not at this stage going to split and take a stand against Maduro, but there are sectors, he said, that would.
What did he say the sectors were?
It was 2 days before the Air Force generals were arrested, so Maduro gave a press conference and said, well, I'll answer Mr. Kelly. Those three were people that you were in touch with. These were the Air Force generals, and they're all linked to you. And he named names. He said the U.S. was behind these three generals in the Air Force. There's attempts to stir things up in the military, but from their own admission, I don't think they feel at this point that they have the conditions in the military, which is why they're using, you know, they've got two irons in the fire. They're not discounting, and they're trying to promote that. They're going to use the sanctions to further create economic hardship. They've already, I think this week they were going to begin implementing some sanctions on especially having to do with oil revenue. Because the Venezuelan oil company sells their oil in the United States. They still sell. So if they can close markets to Venezuela, that would have a huge impact. And that they're hoping to use that leverage.
So we should hear something in the relatively near future what the U.S., quote, sanctions are, right?
That's right. That's right. They've threatened them. And then the second iron in the fire is Corina. She's known as Corina. Machado, traveling across the Americas to try to get Maduro to a U.S.-friendly peace conference.
Boy, it sounds like an offensive here from the U.S. on all fronts here against Venezuela. They're pulling out all the plugs, and they're going after them every which way they can.
Yes.
What about the small farmers and business people? How are they aligned here? Are they supporting, in any of them supporting at all, the Maduro government, or are they all aligned with the right wing?
No. The farmers and small business has received subsidies and has price supports and have, by and large, benefited. It's the larger owners, the big landowners up in the Llano, which is one of the sort of like the
outlying areas near Colombia and so forth.
No. This is up in the highlands, where there's the big farms. Huge, expansive farms owned by big owners, big landlords. There's been no thoroughgoing agrarian reform yet. This is why it's a very contradictory process. It's a revolutionary process trying to convince the big owners to join the Bolivarian process. They've won some over, but some of these big landowners are very much opposed. And they're trying to stir things up among some of the small farmers. Again, there's polarization there. Large numbers of the small, the peasants' federations and the small campesinos, there's been a whole cooperative movement that's taken off big time up in the cities among small businesses and among artisans and small peasants. They've created, banded together in cooperatives to you know, share expenses on, you know, all the materials that are needed, the seed.
So we have an obvious big farmer, small farmer split here in terms
Absolutely.
Of, and big business, small business split here, I guess,
Absolutely.
At the same time.
Absolutely.
What is the Maduro government doing to arm the people in anticipation of this military coup, which looks like it will be forthcoming at some point?
Well, they're not giving arms to the people.
Is that a mistake?
Well, they have no confidence. It's a government that is a Bonapartist government, to use kind of a term that...
What is that for our listeners?
It's a government that is trying to rise above all the different social classes and to keep peace. It doesn't have confidence in the people to bear arms and to fight the coup. They're not sure that those weapons won't be turned against the government because there's discontent.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't... the first measures are to take... and I think the unionists are right, is to say, you know, take steps to solidify your base, and then we will be with you. People are with the government. There's a very strong political consciousness of the role of the U.S. throughout history in Latin America, and they don't want to go back down that road. They were largely lived under different governments in the past, where only the elite benefited. It's one of the most privileged elites in the world, the Venezuelan ruling class, the bourgeoisie, with huge wealth derived from oil, and those privileges have largely been lost. So, no, the government is not arming the people. At a certain point, it will have to. I'm not so sure that the coup is, and I mean, I think that there's the terrain is being prepared to organize the coup. I'm not convinced, as many are, that a coup is imminent.
Mm.
I don't think the conditions are there for a coup within the army, and I think the right wing is more and more isolated. It's becoming more and more desperate, but more and more isolated among the population.
And what were the reasons for that, in your assessment?
Well, you know, if they had been banned from running in elections, if they had not had their opportunity, something like 15 or 16 times to try to overthrow the government through the the ballot box. Had they not had that, then people would say, well, you know, they've been deprived of their, you know, it's legitimate for them to take to the streets because they've tried every other way, but the government hasn't let them. But the government has let these people have every attempt within the Constitution to change policy, and they have not gotten the mandate from the people to do so. And so people are reacting, saying these people are just a bunch of rich, spoiled brats. They couldn't have it one way, so now they're out disrupting and making life miserable for the rest of us. Hmm. And so it's backfiring, and that's the reason for a split within the ruling class. Leopoldo López is the most extreme, saying the electoral means is closed for us now because it's too controlled, and you know, he justifies it by saying that they weren't able to have access to the people and all the rest. It's
what's the moderate wing Capriles proposing or saying? And
they've been sort of led by the it's like the Tea Party pulling the rest of the Republican moderates or so-called mainstream Republicans. They don't have an agenda of their own, so they've been dragged in by the tail or by the nose by the Leopoldo López wing, and that's why they're being discredited, because they're going along with these extremists.
I see.
I don't see the mounting crescendo, but I was on a phone conference yesterday with folks in Venezuela, and they said, you're a little far from this. Right now, in the streets, people are talking about this. The situation can't continue. It's been 2.5 months of confrontations in the street right now, and people not being able to work. It's got to resolve itself one way or the other. And we're saying to the government, resolve it by taking a harder stance against those people who are destabilized.
You think that's what the Maduro government will do?
Will they
crack down more on these companies that are purposely creating inflation? Will they take action here to deal with these street demonstrations? What do you think? Last question.
Well, they're going to have to if they want to salvage the if they want to defend their government, defend against the coup and against they're going to have to.
Okay.
And that's what more and more people are demanding. Will they, or will they bend to the pressures of the Brazilian government interceding and others? That's the big question.
Yeah. Well, gee, I want to thank you for this excellent overview, Alan. I haven't heard this kind of an assessment, general analysis anywhere in my other readings. I really appreciate you coming on us a real view of what's going on there. And I'm sure these events in Venezuela will continue, and maybe we'll have to have you back in a couple months to give us an update.
Well, thank you for all your work for making your space available to raise these critical questions for all of us.
Okay, this is Alternative Visions, Jack Rasmus, and next week we're going to talk about the U.S. economy. Is it really recovering? And what's happening to the rest of the global economy? Seems to be slowing from China to Europe to everywhere. And do we really have a recovery going on? All right, I'll be talking about that next week. Join us on Alternative Visions on the Progressive Radio Network.